Is protein trying to kill us? Or is it the secret to losing weight and living healthy as we age? Let's take a look. Welcome to Holistic Health Made Simple. Are you tired of chasing fad diets and endless workouts? Frustrated and confused by the conflicting advice on health and weight loss? Well, you're not alone. I'm Jolene, a nutritional therapy practitioner, and I'm here to guide you on a different path through holistic wellness. Together, we'll blend ancestral wisdom with scientific principles, making health and weight loss a reality. Say goodbye to yo-yo dieting and hello to simple, individualized steps that will help you reach your goals. Let's explore the power of healing your gut, optimizing your metabolism, and embracing whole foods. Ready to make that personalized wellness a reality? Let's get started on your journey to real health. Hey, hey there! In the last episode, I said I would talk about protein again, specifically about the recent study that has come out. So here goes. On February 19th, 2024, a study was released with the title, Identification of a Leucine-Mediated Threshold Effect Governing Macrophage mTOR Signaling and Cardiovascular Risk. The title is a mouthful, but it basically tells you what it was studying. And the more studies there are, the more the names are going to sound like this because they can't come up with a clever name like a book. They got to just spell out what the heck they're studying. So you may or may not have seen any news reports about it. They might have just framed it as new study says eating a high protein diet causes cardiovascular disease, which was the report I saw that kind of grabbed my attention. So many of us, me and my colleagues, are over here thinking, well, poo, we're trying to get people to eat adequate amounts of protein because they're not eating enough. And now this is going to scare people away from eating protein yet again. I don't know why everybody's afraid of protein, but this study is just adding to that, especially because the average person, and I was this average person a while back, sometimes I still am, we get this news report, we get the title, and we run with it. We never really dial deep into what that study actually said or how it was performed. So what does someone like me now do? First thing I did was go to social media. But it's not what you think. I didn't go to my favorite influencer. I started trying to peek around some of my favorite scientist feeds, seeing what they were saying about it. I have a couple that are nutritional scientists, so they do go after studies like this, or at least go to explain them. Because when I first thing I did, it was try to get the study, and it was behind a paywall. I do not have the finances or the wherewithal to get behind that paywall. It's quite expensive. So I didn't have access to the actual study, which concerned me because why is it behind a paywall? It's brand new. It's being plastered everywhere. So did anybody actually read the study that's reporting on it? Those are thoughts that go through my mind. So while I didn't have the study, I'm reading through some of these scientists who have access to the study, explaining some of the problems with the study. And then someone I know actually reached out to the author because she somehow dug up his email address and asked him for the study, and he was more than happy to oblige with a PDF copy. So I now had access to the study to correlate what these people in social media were saying, because they're scientists, but they also have their own biases, and what the study said, so I could see with my own eyes if what they were saying and what the study said meshed, were the same thing. So I did. I was in awe and in shock when I actually saw the methodology and how they conducted the study and how they came up with the conclusion. So, first and foremost, my mind was blown at how these researchers made the conclusion they did based solely on two feedings, one high protein and one low protein. And on top of that, I looked at what these feedings or food were. And then my head started spinning. I was like, really? Really? They came up with this conclusion based on this. The liquid meals were prepared in a scientist metabolic kitchen. Using varying amounts of Boost Plus, yeah, that stuff you buy at the supermarket, and a commercial protein isolate called Unjury, which I don't know if we have there. It might be specific to the Europe. I'm not sure. But it was a combination of this Boost Plus, this Unjury, which is also a protein isolate, non-fat dry milk powder, and something called Soul Carb, which is a commercial nutritional carbohydrate polymer. Canola oil and water. That was the ingredients of both feedings, both the low protein and the high protein, or normal protein, whatever you want to call it. They just adjusted the ratios of everything so they got a high protein and a low protein. Well, this isn't food. This is some random concoction that nobody would actually eat. At least I would hope nobody would actually consume as a fuel source, as a nutritional source. But okay, that's problem number one, and that's me coming from that whole food mantra. Eat real whole foods. Okay, then I saw how the testing methodology was done. So they took the people after they were fasted 12 hours, which means they didn't eat for 12 hours. They gave them a single feeding of either the low protein or the high protein, depending on which they were testing that day. And then they pulled the test markers acutely, what they call acutely, which means it was pulled within the first few hours of consumption. That's it. It was two feedings, and so probably a couple weeks apart. Fasted for 12 hours, and then for a few hours after they consumed this drink, they pulled their test markers. That was it. Not a few weeks, not a few months. They didn't feed them a few weeks of the same foods, a few months, one feeding, and test markers were pulled within a few hours. That's it. That's the methodology. They then took the results of these test markers and used long-term data from a mice model study and extrapolated their conclusion. You see the problem with this? I mean, common sense. I know I'm not a research scientist, but common sense says what happened short-term in a human may or may not be the same exact thing that happens long-term in a mouse. Get me? Are you on the same wavelength as me? You know, one, it's not even real food. Two, it's not even long term. So we don't even really can say, we can't really say that having high protein because you have high amounts of leucine in you right after you eat it or drink it in this matter, that it's going to cause cardiovascular disease. And that's exactly what these scientists said and did. Taking acute post-meal responses, then tying it to results in mice, and then extrapolating long-term will very, very rarely produce the same expected results if you were to do it long-term. Based on this methodology that was used for this particular study, we can say exercise is bad for your heart because acutely it increases inflammation, which can lead to cardiovascular disease. Though we all know the long-term effects of exercise is the exact opposite when it comes to cardiovascular disease. You cannot take acute readings and say that because acutely some A is happening, it's going to happen long-term and cause a problem down the road. But that's what they did with the study. So why? Why is it being run that high protein is bad for you when they didn't even really prove it? Why was this peer-reviewed allowed on such a bizarre type of study to begin with? Did the researchers have conflict of interest? Well, according to the self-disclosures in the actual study, they did not. But it actually seems they were searching for this conclusion. So they probably had a bias, and a strong bias at that. You see, they are human, just like you and I, and we all have biases. Yeah. I have a bias that whole food's better than chemicals made in a lab. I also think that having more protein will actually benefit you long term, but we'll get into that part in a minute. So we all have biases. That same day that the previous study came out, an additional study came out. It was titled Red and Processed Meat Intake and the Risk of Cardiovascular Disease, a two-sample Mendelian randomized study. This study concluded that there was no significant causal relationship between red and processed meat intake and the risk of the four cardiovascular disease outcomes examined. Now, they did say further investigation is warranted to confirm the findings they found. And they defined red meat as pork, mutton, and beef, and the processed versions of them as well as not processed. So on the same day, you have two studies coming out that are saying very different things. One is saying proteins causing cardiovascular disease. The other one's saying that red meat doesn't cause cardiovascular disease. Now, one is studying the amounts and one is just studying the types. I get that. However, one was picked up by the news media and one wasn't. Is there biases in the news media regarding protein and meat? I don't know. But the bottom line is meat is the most bioavailable form of protein you can get. It also is full of vitamins and minerals. So it is an important part of our diet to stay and be healthy. It's things like this that make nutrition very confusing. There's so much conflicting information out there that who knows where to start? Who knows what's best? If you've listened to anything I've ever said about protein, you know I am for you to consume adequate amounts of protein. An adequate amount is 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight, not your current body weight, ideal body weight. Your current body weight for some people might be too much or actually might be too little if you're underweight. For many, they would classify that amount of protein as a high protein diet. For many, it's only moderate. For the average person, it's necessary to prevent disease and have a long, healthy, strong life. The Western world has an obesity epidemic that can be traced back to when fat was fully demonized, which led for us to consume it less and less and less, or removed, and protein was really not discussed as a necessity for a healthy body. In place of that, carbohydrates, which were mostly processed, replaced them in the diet because you still need to eat a certain amount of food to not be hungry. So we went low fat or no fat, as close to no fat as we could. We followed the RDA for protein, which we know is the minimum requirement to prevent deficiencies. That's not thriving, that's deficiencies. And the RDA for carbohydrates seemingly vanished because there was one a long time ago. Now it doesn't seem to exist. Adequate protein intake is necessary to maintain healthy muscle. There are 9 essential amino acids out of the 20 amino acids in our body. The 9 are ones we must get from food because our bodies can't make them. It will make the rest. Think of these 9 essential amino acids as like the VIP of the amino acid world. It's essential for building and repairing tissues, making enzymes, making hormones, and supporting your overall health. And again, I can't stress this enough. We need new amino acids to make new muscle tissue. Muscle is one of those organs that is multi-purpose. Building and maintaining muscle mass is associated with improved insulin sensitivity. Insulin sensitivity refers to how effectively your body responds to insulin. You know, the hormones that's responsible for regulating blood sugar levels. When your muscles are sensitive to insulin, they can efficiently take up the glucose from the bloodstream, even when you're not exercising. Muscle also helps prevent age-related muscle loss, sarcopenia, It's something that we all go through and we need to fight as we age. It can also, muscle will also help improve your bone density. It supports joint health and it enhances functional abilities as we age. We need to be strong and mobile as we age. Besides all of the fantastic health benefits of building muscle, protein also can be a secret weapon in losing weight. Protein helps with satiety, you know, it keeps you full. After digestion breaks it down into the amino acids, they circulate in your blood and are used when needed. Often, rather than these amino acids being stored as fat, it's excreted from the body in your urine. And I don't want you to worry about kidney function. Studies show that what they were defining as a problem with high protein diets or higher protein excretion is not really affecting your kidney health. And another plus by upping your protein to adequate amounts is that it has the highest thermogenic effect of all macronutrients, meaning it takes more energy to digest it than carbohydrates or fats. This does not mean it is hard on the body. It does not mean that it lingers inside your stomach and does not mean that it takes forever to digest. What it means is it takes more energy to digest. Now, if it's actually lingering inside your body, I want you to look at stomach acid and your overall digestion because you should be able to digest it in a normal amount of time. So leaning into my bias, the secret to having health as you age is eating adequate protein, building some muscle by moving your body, and having enough fiber. Not tons from supplements, but enough for you to feed your gut microbiome. You know, coming from whole foods produce, basically. It's pretty simple formula, and it's the best place to start for a healthy, mobile body as you age. The earlier you start, the better, but there is no better time than starting today. And on that note, friends, I will talk to you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening in today. I hope you got some nuggets to take on your health journey. Remember, this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. No medical advice is being given. By listening to this podcast, you agree to the full disclaimer, which is linked in the show notes. If you found this podcast helpful, could you take 30 seconds and leave a review? Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps others discover my show. Once again, thank you for being part of my community. Until next time, have a blessed day.